Hey guys, on today's episode, we are going to be talking about the Commander 2015 decks. But before we get there, let's talk about our sponsor for the show, which is Loot Crate. Yes, we've talked about Loot Crate before. I've known Matthew and the guys that run this company for a very long time. Like I've said to you guys before, they've helped us out on numerous fundraising campaigns for both Video Game High School and for my personal project, Band-Aid. I love these guys. I've known them for a long time, and they're here to provide a service to you guys. It's basically a subscription service for under $20 a month for a box filled with sweet, exclusive, collectible gear from all sorts of different parts of pop culture. This month, they are doing combat. So they have items from Blizzard, from Fallout 4, Capcom, The Hunger Games, etc. There's lots of stuff inside each of these boxes. They always try to aim to put about $40 worth of gear inside each box. So you're getting it for less than $20 a month. And if you guys go to lootcrate.com/command and enter the code command, you can actually save $3 on a new subscription. And to get this month's combat themed box, basically go and sign up. You have until November 19th at 9 p.m. Pacific time. All right, let's get on with the episode.
Greetings, humans. You have entered the Command Zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
Ready.
Steady.
Ready, steady, go.
I don't even remember how that song goes.
I don't know how the song goes either.
I know Tom Cruise was like being a hitman while
yeah.
I was going
ready, on. Steady. It's for Collateral.
Collateral,
right?
Yeah.
Okay, well, we know how that movie goes, and it's great. This
Tom
is a podcast.
Cruise has blonde hair.
That is not Collateral. Oh, yeah. Tom Cruise looks crazy in that movie.
Yeah. He was crazy. Well, he's crazy in real life, actually.
Really? I had no idea. I've never seen anything that would ever lead me to believe that Tom Cruise is not a perfectly sane...
Is this part of the show, or is it not part of the show?
We kind of started with a song. Usually we start with like a musical thing.
Well, we didn't tell Terry to cut it out, so I guess it's part of the show.
Hey, everybody. How's it going? You are listening to The Command Zone. I'm your host, Jimmy Wong.
How's it? It's Josh Lee Kwai.
Hooray! We're here, and Commander 2015 spoilers are all over the place.
So awesome!
Yeah. As of the recording of this video, we have 52 out of the 55 spoilers known. Which is really exciting.
And we sort of know what two of the ones that are missing are.
Yeah,
because they're part of cycles. I mean, we don't know what they do, but we know what they are.
Maybe we could make little predictions and see where they...
Okay.
That'd be fun. That just because they are cycles, you know?
Yeah, it might be possible to do some conjecture.
Yeah. And there's also a bunch of really exciting reprints. We announced our spoiler card in our last episode, Rite of the Raging Storm, which was really sweet. I'm glad that we got to, you know... be on top of that one ourselves. Get one for the old Command Zone.
That's right. That's like our fourth spoiler card.
I think it's our fourth. Yeah, because we had Impact, something.
Resonance
from the C14.
Yeah. Then we had Great Aurora,
and then we had Sanctum of Ugin.
No.
Wait, it was one of the.
It's Sanctum though.
Sanctum. Was it not Sanctum of Ugin?
It might be Sanctum of Ugin. It's a Sanctum.
It was Sanctum of Ugin.
Okay.
Yeah. I was just watching it earlier today.
And then we had Rite of the Raging Storm.
Left of the Raging Storm.
Sorry, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. So today we are just going to basically take a first look at Commander 2015. We will do full reviews of the decks when they come out. And we like to do this thing where we also show you how you can upgrade the deck, what it will fit into, and cards you could buy and get to sort of like, you know, pimp out your whatever.
Even if you don't, like maybe which of the legendary creatures you might run as the general, and maybe if you just want to switch out a few cards or just, you know, what you think about maybe when you're playing it. So we will definitely do all of those when the entire spoiler is known for like the full deck list.
Yeah, which is really exciting because there's tons of cards that we don't know that are going to be in the set. There are 55 new commander cards, but... across each of those decks, I mean, I'm pretty sure we'll see a Soul Ring and a Command Tower in each of them, but we have no idea what the other cards are going to be.
Yeah, there's at least another 300 cards or so we don't know.
Yeah, very exciting.
So, I mean, like you said, they might share some cards, so maybe it's not that many, but there's going to be a lot. So.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I hope there's some awesome reprints.
There
probably
have
not
been
all the
ones
that we predicted.
Yeah, I'm still waiting on that sort of cycle, you know.
Pretty sure.
1,000% on that one. Followed by,
don't say it, because I got in trouble for going to Magical Christmas Land and asking
baby in Gaia's cradle. Gone, baby, gone. That is your street cred, Josh. Yeah,
There you go. Now we're getting more emails and people saying, why don't you guys be, like, realistic?
I like how emails, that's, like, the next step. It's, like, we get a tweet. It's like, yeah, sure, you can tweet. But we get an email like someone sat down and typed out CommandCast.
Like 12 paragraphs.
At rocketjump.com and told us, hey, you guys, come on, get real. Anyway.
We do get nice ones too, so I shouldn't complain. We get a lot of like people that are saying they love the show.
And
blah, blah, blah,
we fully appreciate the ones that disagree with us too, because if you didn't disagree with us, well, the show would get really boring really fast.
I love that people have they just have tons of passion for this game, which is great.
I agree with that.
Okay.
We have passion for it, right?
We do. I think so.
I would hope so.
So the first thing we want to talk about is the new legendary creatures.
Yeah.
So there are, there's usually three per pre-con deck.
Mm-hmm.
We know two of them right now. Usually there's two new ones and a reprint.
Yep.
So we're assuming it's going to be the same. We don't know for sure. Maybe there will only be two. Maybe there'll be four. We don't know.
Who knows?
We do know that we've got two new, brand new, never before seen legendary creatures per color pair.
Enemy colored pairs. So 10 total right now.
10 total
right
now.
Sick. So cool.
Pretty sweet. And they fall into two categories right now. So we're going to talk about them in those categories. So the first category is the experience counter generals.
Yeah. So experience counters, if you guys don't know, this is spoiled when we talk about Calumny, the red-white commander. They're essentially a counter that you get as a player, similar to how you might get an infect counter. And these experience counters all increase in different ways, and each of these commander cards will tell you basically on the card how you get another experience counter, and those experience counters matter for different reasons. So
yeah, the commanders both give you the experience counters or enable you to get them, and they care about them.
Yeah.
So how many you have? Well, let's just go through and we can just talk about each one a little bit. Again, we're not going to go super in depth because we will save that for when we actually do the reviews of each deck, but we will talk about them a little here because it's exciting.
Yeah, it is very exciting. So first up, we have Daxos the Returned. Now, you guys may remember Daxos as not being a guy with a creepy golden mask on. Before, he used to be blue-white, and he used to have a big sword, but now he is an enchantment guy. He is one black-white for a legendary creature, zombie soldier. Uh-oh, he died and came back. He's a 2-2. Whenever you cast an enchantment spell, you get an experience counter. So Daxos cares how many enchantments you cast, and for one, a black and a white, also his casting cost, put a white and black spirit enchantment creature token onto the battlefield. It has... This creature's power and toughness are each equal to the number of experience counters you have.
So, a couple of things to note. One is that you don't have to tap Daxos to do this. So, if you have 6 mana available to you, you could make 2.
Mm-hmm.
This seems pretty dang good.
Yeah, and he's very cheap as well. Anytime a general costs 3 mana or less, I think it's you should always take note.
And all of the generals with the experience counters are... 4 mana or less, they're all cheap, although Daxos is the cheapest. And that makes sense to me because the way that experience counters work, it would be kind of silly to have one that costs 7 mana.
Yeah.
Because by the time you get it out, how many more cards are you even going to play that could give you experience counters? So you sort of need to get these guys out early before you play your other cards, because presumably your other cards are going to get you experience counters in the way whatever general wants.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, Daxos, it's pretty obvious. You just want a lot of enchantments.
Yeah, enchantment matters. So we're going to also, for each of these commanders, talk about some cards that you could play in the deck that would be very good.
Yeah, just sort of the first ones that come to mind for us. You know, you probably think of different ones, and we'd love to hear from you on Twitter or in the comment section or over email about what crazy awesome things that you see when you see the mechanics for each of these generals. Yeah, the first thing I thought of was Sigil of the Empty Throne.
Yeah, this card's sweet. This is from Magic Origins. 3 in white-white, whenever you cast an enchantment spell, put a 4-4 white angel creature token with flying onto the battlefield.
So you're already going to want to be casting a lot of enchantments. This is just like, oh, so for each one I get an experience counter and a 4-4 flying angel? That seems good. And now, this card's super cheap, too.
Yeah.
Because nobody wanted it.
Well, there was a deck that was running around in Standard for just a little bit that was around this card, which was really sweet. Notably, though, Daxos' ability does not trigger this. It's not when the enchantment comes into play under
your
control.
Right.
But if this is the enchantment deck, that doesn't really matter. You're still making 4/4s. That's pretty good.
Yeah, it's going to be really good. Just basically, it doubles up the amount of things you're getting. So every time you play an enchantment, you know, you're going to want those experience counters to make those tokens bigger. But what do you want those tokens for? To attack people. Well, you know what else attacks people? 4/4 flying angels.
Yeah, it's pretty good. And not to mention, it's just pretty much what you want to be doing in the deck is putting out enchantments that really like have a high level of impact, which is cool because they're I don't really play enchantment decks because they seem more fragile, you know.
Yeah, and because Theros was so recent, we just got this big influx of enchantments.
Yeah,
and we got things like bestow creatures. And it used to be like hard to build an entire deck out of enchantments, but now some enchantments are creatures.
Mm-hmm.
So that helps you out a lot. The next one on the list actually covers you in an area that we're always talking about.
Oh, yeah.
It is the Mesa Enchantress. So Mesa Enchantress is 1/2 white for an 0/2 human druid. But whenever you cast an enchantment spell, you may draw a card.
Ooh, you mean... You will draw a card.
Yeah. You're never going to be like, I could, but I'm not going to. Maybe against Nekusar, I guess,
yeah.
Anyway, this is good. Again, you have to cast the spell. It's not when enchantment comes into play. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, most of the enchantment comes into play. Cards are in green. Like Eidolon of Blossoms would be awesome. But this does do some good card draw in a deck that has a lot of enchantments, which presumably you will.
Yeah, and it's white and black, which does not have the best card draw. Black does have a decent amount of card draw, but it hurts you, of course.
Mm-hmm.
There's also a card like Starfield of Nyx is another Magic Origins card that came out. This is actually a little more debatable. It's 4 and a white. At the beginning of your upkeep, you may return target enchantment card from your graveyard to the battlefield. So that's sweet. By itself. You're not casting it again, so you're not going to trigger your experience counters, but you get your best enchantments back. But it does also say, as long as you control 5 or more enchantments, each other non-aura enchantment you control is a creature in addition to its other types and has base power and base toughness, each equal to its converted mana cost. So Starfield of Nyx will become a 5/5 because it's a 4 and a white. But this also just leaves our enchantments up to just getting blown out of the water.
Yeah, now if you get wrathed by something that says destroy all creatures, it'll actually take away your enchantments. One of the great things about enchantments is they're the most difficult thing to remove. Because they just have less removal that actually hits them than any other type of card, besides maybe Planeswalkers, but you can attack those directly. So enchantments are generally safer than other things. So
yeah.
I think you probably do put that in the deck. You just have to choose your spot to play it. But there's probably times where you go, boom, attack you with all my stuff. And it's like, oh, they didn't see that coming.
Yeah.
And you can win that way. But you wouldn't just run it out there and let it sit there for 6 turns because you're asking for it.
Yeah, because it triggers only on your upkeep, you're really just waiting. Like, you're giving the whole table a rotation. I mean, I'd rather flash it in and then get something back and then maybe, you know, do something with it.
Right.
The recursion ability is nice there.
The next one is a little bit of an expensive card. It's a land. It's Sarah's Sanctum.
Oh, it's kind of like Gaia's Cradle, but for white.
Yes, and in this deck, it would be just like Gaia's Cradle. It's a legendary land. You can tap it and add white to your mana pool for each enchantment you control. So this would count the tokens that you've made with Daxos, because they are enchantments. They just don't get cast. This is insane in this deck. I mean, if you have the means to get it, it's just, I think it's about $45-$50.
Yeah, it's a real good card, especially in a deck that says, I like enchantments.
Yeah, in a deck that's going to literally be like at least 30%, probably more of enchantments. It's very good.
Yeah, and because it's only 2 colors, you do not care that you're just adding a bunch of 1 color to your mana pool as well. Finally, we have Replenish, a card I play a lot in decks that need doubling season. Otherwise, they kind of just fall flat.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a 3 and a white sorcery. Return all enchantment cards from your graveyard to the battlefield. Every single one. Yeah, so if you get like Fracturing Gusted and it wipes out all your stuff, don't worry. Replenish is right around the corner.
Don't worry. Well, so there's a reason to play the Starfield of Nyx.
There you go.
You're like, oh, I'm just going to replenish.
Yeah.
So I don't care if they die.
What do you think about him?
I think he's very, very good.
Yeah,
I think this is a very cool deck. I think there's a lot of support for it in those colors.
I'm a big fan of the art. It's super creepy.
Yeah, this is... There are some very good ones, though. I don't know where I rank this right now. Second or third, probably.
Yeah, I could see third.
All right, you want to read the next one?
Yeah, the next one I think is the most powerful.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think so. Mizzix of the Ismagnus. 2 a blue and a red. So he is the blue-red version. I just said that. Great. Mizzix of the Ismagnus. It took me... I'm making a deck for this right now, and I wanted to talk about the deck extensively in this episode, but we have so much other stuff to talk about, I probably won't get to it.
Well, that will be good. We'll do a deck tech downline. Actually, I've been sort of brewing with it too, so maybe we'll do a side-by-side.
Side-by-side, yeah, that'd be sweet. He's a 2/2 legendary creature, goblin wizard. Any surprises why I like this guy? whenever you cast an instant or sorcery spell with converted mana cost greater than the number of experience counters you have, you get an experience counter. Instant and sorcery spells you cast cost 1 mana less, colorless, to cast for each experience counter you have.
So I'm calling this the Animar of instants and sorceries.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's it's a little hard to get experience counters onto him as compared to the other ones, because it actually cares. Like, if you've got four experience counters and you cast an instant or sorcery that costs four, you don't get one. It needs to be greater than
correct.
The number of experience counters you have. So once you've got like six experience counters, it's hard to get the seventh.
Yep.
But
blue.
X spells. X spells are the key to this, I think. And also, they work really well with the counters, because X spells, you just add as much mana into them as you want and they get better, right?
Yeah. If you have four experience counters, X can automatically always be four.
Right.
It doesn't have to be. It just reduces the cost to cast it. So if you choose for X to be two, then you don't have to, obviously. You don't have to go all the way, if that makes sense.
Which may make sense when you're doing like a X damage to all creatures or something, and you've got a creature with a certain amount of power and you don't want to kill it, so you'll be under that.
Yeah, that's true.
But most of the time, you're going to like Brain Geyser, and you're going to draw X cards, and you're going to want X to be as many as possible.
Yeah, or force someone else to just mill themselves out.
True, which I think you could probably get to that point in this deck, where you've got literally like 40 experience counters, and you just destroy people.
And the reason I said blue is because that's the one of the main colors of Proliferate.
Yep.
And Proliferate works that you can just double the amount of counters on a player or a creature. And in this case, if you have poison counters, you can proliferate them up and kill someone faster with infect. But
it doesn't double. It just...
Double. You increase. Yeah. So right. you just add another.
Counter.
Yeah. So Proliferate's great in this deck because it's a way to be like, well, I have five experience counters, but I keep drawing my two mana sorceries or whatever. It's a great way to be like, well, you can still level it up, and your X spells get better and better every single time you proliferate, because it goes to 7, then to 8, and then you're just casting crazy stuff.
In fact, speaking of proliferate, one of the cards we have written down is Inexorable Tide. You may remember this one from Modern Masters 2.
The card you never
You would never draft it. It was always like second to last in the deck,
yeah.
Or when you're drafting. It's 3/2 blue for an enchantment. It says, whenever you cast a spell, proliferate. So again, proliferate is choose any number of permanents and or players with counters on them, and then give each another counter of the kind it already has. So if you've got an experience counter, you get a second one. Or if you get five, you get a sixth.
Everyone gets
any time
counters.
You cast a spell. This also works really well with some things that probably go in this deck, like Storage Lands.
Yeah. Storage Lands.
Like Everflowing Chalice. Like, you're going to put anything in the deck that can get counters like that, because it can grow over time with your proliferate stuff. So it's like, oh, the proliferate works with my experience counters. Well, it also works with a bunch of cards that I'm going to play too. And that's a way, I think, to build this deck to make it be really powerful.
Yeah, just to really ramp quickly. I think this deck is incorrectly built if you're sitting there waiting to draw a spell with a higher converted mana cost.
Yeah.
Just hoping, like, oh God, please, I need to get more experience counters. You should be in control of that. And all these decks can do that, by the way, if you have proliferate available to you.
And there are some colorless ways to proliferate. There's Contagion Engine and Contagion Clasp.
Yeah. And there's a creature that does it as well when it dies.
I would not be surprised if some of those are reprinted in these precons.
Yeah, that'd be really interesting.
Yeah, especially the non-blue ones. And black has a little proliferate too. But yeah. Anyway, other cards that go with this, go ahead.
Notably, I will say, just in general, any cards with buyback. So that's you can pay an additional cost when you cast it to get it back to your hand. Any cards with kickers on them, Retrace, Forecast, and Overload, I believe all work with Mizzix's sort of reduction in cost. And so, like, you're basically getting a lot of really cheap cards in cheap instants and sorceries, but the great part about it is that if you only have one experience counter and you need to cast a two-mana spell that can be overloaded for 8, you can just cast it for 2. But correct. If you draw it later in the game,
you can cast it for 8.
Yeah. Yep. So it's a great way to have flexibility within your spells. A card that's really, really sweet is Pyromancer's Goggles.
Oh, man. This card is so good in this deck.
Yeah. Pyromancer's Goggles at first seems really expensive. It's 5 mana for a legendary artifact, and you tap it to add red to your mana pool, and when it's spent to cast a red instant or sorcery, you can copy it and choose new targets for the copy. Oof. It's a reverberate.
But it's on an artifact, so you get to do that every time you cast a red spell. It's not just like once. And again, if you are doing like big X spells, like even Fireball will become so brutal if you've got like 10 experience counters and you cast it with Pyromancer's Goggles.
Yeah, it's immediately 10, 20 to 2, yeah.
How many mana you got? 5 or 6? So now it's 15 doubled, so that's just 30 damage, boom. Yeah. Plus you get another experience counter when you cast it. Howl of the Horde is one I really, really like.
Finally, this card's going to see play.
Yeah, it's Howl of the Horde is 2 and a red for a sorcery. When you cast your next instant or sorcery spell this turn, copy that spell. You may choose new targets for the copy. But it has raid. If you attacked with a creature this turn, when you cast your first instant or sorcery spell this turn, copy that spell an additional time, and you may choose new targets for that copy. So if you've attacked, you get to copy something twice, and if you haven't, you get to copy it once. The great thing about this card is it costs a red and two colorless, mm-hmm. so it actually will only cost a red.
Yeah.
And you're basically getting double your money back for the experience counters, because it's you get the two reduction, and then whatever you cast that you're copying, you get the reduction on that. So again, in the fireball scenario, 45 damage.
Jesus.
Also, if you cast Howl of the Horde with Pyromancer's Goggles,
oh, yeah,
and you've attacked, now you get
60?
You get two extra copies. So yeah. If you cast that fireball for 15, you cast it actually five times.
Oof.
Yeah, and you kill two people.
That's pretty good. Mizzix, what the heck, man? You are angry.
Mizzix, you're kind of awesome.
Yeah, you're kind of awesome. Let's see here. We also have the original Melek, which a lot of people are saying, like, great, this is going to be my new Melek deck. Melek is a 4, a blue, and a red for a legendary creature. Weird Wizard. You heard that right. you play with the top card of your library revealed, and you can cast the top card of your library if it's an instant or sorcery, and then whenever you do cast an instant or sorcery from your library, you can copy it and choose new targets for the copy. So that's cool. You get to play with the top card of your deck and double it if you cast it from the top. But I think Mizzix is a bit better.
But Melek definitely is great in the deck.
In the deck, for sure. Yeah,
sure. What else we got here? Oh, you just have, utility counter spells.
Yeah, there's a lot of counter spells that are like 2 in blue, counter target spell, untap up to 4 lands.
Yep. And I think a lot of this is going to be a Drago deck for a lot of it. So you're going to have some sorceries, but you're going to have a lot of instants. You're going to want as many, sort of counter spells and then instant ways to draw cards so that it gives you the option of like, oh, if I didn't want to counter something, then I'll draw a bunch of cards and get an experience counter.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's pretty smart.
And I believe this is the first time Epic Experiment's finally going to be really playable.
Epic Experiment. I hadn't even thought about this card, honestly.
Every time I want to build a deck and I'm in those colors, I look at that card and I'm like, yeah, yeah.
Finally.
And then I don't play it because it's like, nah, it wasn't good enough. finally, it's found a home.
Epic Experiment. Okay. It's a red and a blue and X for a sorcery. Exile the top X cards of your library. For each instant and sorcery card with converted mana costs X or less among them, you may cast that card without paying its mana cost. Then put all cards exiled this way that weren't cast into your graveyard. So this is just going to... what's the green card that does it for creatures?
Oh, Genesis Wave?
Yeah, it's kind of like that, but for instance in sorceries.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, this won't work very good with your X spells that are in your deck, but it'll work good with everything else.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of everything else. And of course, I think in this deck, you also put a lot of flashback spells in there, as well as ways to get stuff back out of your graveyard. So it going to your graveyard is not, a huge deal if you exile like 20 cards or whatever, because guess what? You're gonna cast a lot of stuff off of 20.
And well, let's be real. Like 90% of Commander games, you end the game and you have 50 plus cards in your library. So milling yourself out, unless your meta is very specific, isn't really a worry.
Yeah, definitely not.
And if you cast just like 12 instants and sorceries off this thing, no matter what they are, it's going to be like...
You're going to probably turn the game
around. Even if they're lightning bolts, you could probably kill two players.
Yeah.
If you have...
Wait, how'd you get that many lightning bolts?
Yeah, you're cheating. That was an example. No, you cannot do that, Jimmy.
I think you just...
Please?
I think you just let me.
That is a good call. That card is pretty strong.
Yeah, it's busted.
The next one is Kalemni, Disciple of Iroas. Iroas? Yeah. I don't know how to say it.
But... I'm just going to go say it right now. Womp womp.
Yeah, we talked about this. We talked about her before. We always bag on Boros, and here we are, bagging on Boros still. I'll just read her. 2, a red and a white for a legendary creature. Giant soldier. She's a 3-3, so a 4-mana 3-3. She has double strike.
She does have giant shoulders, too.
Yeah,
notably.
And giant swords. She's, 3-3 double strike vigilance for 4. Whenever you cast a creature spell with converted mana cost 5 or greater, you get an experience counter. Kalemni gets +1/+1 for each experience counter you have.
Thank goodness red and white is great at proliferating. Oh, wait.
Thank goodness red and white is good at ramping. Oh, wait. Thank goodness they're good at cheating out creatures. Oh, wait.
Like, thank goodness red white, you just want to play a bunch of 5+ drop creature spells.
Actually, I lied. You can't even cheat out the creature. It says whenever you cast a creature spell.
Yeah. Well, you need like a reduction like Mizzix gives,
Animar, I no, can't nope. go in Animar.
Five color Kalemni.
It just Kalemni feels like you play her on turn four and then you play a five drop and she's a 4/4 double striker.
Yeah. I mean, you could have a lot of equipment and stuff in the, you know, to make her a true Voltron general. I think she has potential to be very strong as a Voltron general, but here's
maybe
the thing.
Because a Voltron deck doesn't usually want to play a bunch of five mana cost plus creatures. They want to play a yeah. bunch of enchantments and equipment.
And Kalemni, like, you want to play Mother of Runes. You know, you don't want to play a five drop that you can't do anything with because then you use all your mana for the next turn.
Don't you mean Mother of Runes?
Mother of Runes.
You want to play the Mother of Runes. Then they can't kill her.
Here's the thing.
Kalemni's not Scottish, by the way. She's
no,
got to be
she's
Greek.
Definitely Greek. She's this, the disciple of Eurawas himself.
So then it's even worse because if it's not Scottish, it's crap.
It is a bunch of crap. You know, there is potential here. I just don't think we've found it yet.
I don't think there's potential here. But hey, everybody, go ahead and prove me wrong.
Hey, you know, I was thinking we should maybe do a surprise giveaway.
A surprise?
Well, I decided. It's a surprise to me.
I'm surprised, actually. Not you're not surprised. I'm surprised. I'm like, we are?
Okay, here's the thing. We have to give something away because it's Commander 2015, right?
We got to.
It's up to you guys. By the way, thanks for listening to this point because you're hearing about the surprise giveaway now. It's up to all the guys and gals of the world to send us on Twitter or, I guess, over email something cool to do with Kalemni.
Prove us wrong.
Yeah, prove us wrong. Send us like something sweet that we didn't think of that is your coolest combo. It's not going to be random, I guess. We'll actually subjectively choose one. And guess what?
We'll pick which one of these best.
And I'll personally...
And if you don't like it, too bad.
I'll personally send you the Kalemni deck because you earned it.
Because you deserve it.
You deserve it. You're a great person. Congrats. You figured out Boros.
All right. Can I stop talking like this now?
Yes. So you can tweet us at CommandCast or email us commandcast@rocketjump.com. We'll announce it, I guess, next week, I suppose. Or maybe, so you guys have some time.
Prove me wrong because I am so like Kalemni just does not... Yeah. She doesn't distinguish herself above like Gisela or
not even close.
Tajik or any of the millions of Boros generals. She just seems like most of them and worse than most of them.
Yeah. So show us, prove us wrong. The guy and girl or girl that proves us the most wrong wins a Kalemni deck.
Good luck.
Good luck.
All right. Moving on. We're not even going to talk about any cards because we don't want to give you a head start. And also, we didn't think of any.
Also, the cards that we gave you were just bored. Other legendary creatures in those colors.
Okay, so let's go to Marin of Clan Neltoth. Mm. I don't know who Clan Neltoth is.
I think this might be the second most powerful.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I like this card a lot.
I've got this at fourth. We're going to talk about it. It's two, a green and a black for a legendary creature, Human Shaman. She's a 3/4. Whenever another creature you control dies, you get an experience counter. That's pretty great because that's easy.
Super easy.
At the beginning of your end step, choose target creature in your graveyard. If that card's converted mana cost is less than or equal to the number of experience counters you have, return it to the battlefield. Otherwise, put it into your hands. Now, a lot of people are skipping over that otherwise portion, but that's actually pretty good. So you can choose a creature that actually is any creature. It doesn't matter how many experience points or experience counters you have. You'll get that creature back into your hand. But if you do happen to have more experience counters than its CMC or equal to, it just goes directly onto the field.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
I mean, it is a little slow. It's dependent. It's on your end step, right?
Well, the great thing is you play Marin and immediately get something back to your hand if you've got something in there, because it's at the end step, too.
Yeah. I mean, it's also black-green, you know. It's the colors of having things to sacrifice to give her experience counters, tokens, scions, you know, all that good stuff.
I think Eldrazi spawns and scions are super good, because she's in green. You can have From Beyond and Awakening Zone. You can also just have, like...
Yeah, totally.
Eyeless Watchers and stuff. So you can immediately just get her a bunch of experience... or get yourself a bunch of experience counters if you want, because you just go, oh, I've got four Eldrazi signs. I just sack them all to get experience counters.
And then you just entomb something, and then boom, you've got an Eldrazi on the battlefield in turn four. I think it's possible.
Yeah. And then turn five, when she's out, you just start casting Fleshbag Marauder and then bringing it back at the end step.
It really
so, like,
everyone's day.
How are people going to keep up with that? Like, you can do that every turn. Fleshbag Marauder is a creature like Merciless Executioner, where when you cast it, everybody has to sacrifice a creature, and you can sacrifice it. so it's in the graveyard, and then you bring it back on instep. Sacrifice it again.
That's something that Carador decks do a lot, I've seen. And it's super good against Voltron because they're like, hey, we have one creature. It's really buff. Look at all these enchantments. Sacrifice.
I mean, literally just destroys a Voltron deck.
Yeah.
Especially if you can figure out a way to do it at instant speed, which is tougher in these colors. But yeah, it is strong.
Yeah, I dig it.
It is very much like Carador.
But not three colors, just two of them.
Yeah, I think that's why I would almost just play Carador, because you just get that extra color. But this is, the effect is actually different, because Carador, you cast something out of your graveyard, so you still have to pay the mana cost. At a certain point, Marin can just get something back for free.
Yeah.
You know, and once you've got nine experience cards, you just like Shieldred. And like, you can kill it, I just bring it back.
Bring it back, yeah.
That's kind of brutal.
You get bring out Vorinclex, like that card just shuts down tables.
Ugh. Yeah, it's pretty good. I don't know. You almost talked me into it. I almost talked myself into it. I don't know who talked me into it, but...
Yeah, getting there. next up, we have Azuri, Claw of Progress. Quick shout out, James Pianca, frequent collaborator on the show, guest, named this card.
Pretty cool.
The Claw of Progress.
Claw of Progress.
Yeah, he really likes lobster. I don't know what he's holding something in here. It looks like, oh, it's a tree. I thought it was like a bug he was going to eat later.
He likes lobster. It does look like lobster a little bit.
He's two, a green and a blue. But the way he looks, he feels like he needs to be black. But
this is my pick for most powerful, by the way.
Oh, you think so? Okay. Yeah. He's a 3/3 legendary creature elf warrior. He looks insane. The art on this guy is freaking
poor
amazing.
Azuri got taken over by the Phyrexians.
Yeah.
Poor our friend Phil DeLuca from Commander, and he's going to never be able to play this card because his card's bonkers.
It's certainly going to get played against him, however. His text, whenever a creature with power 2 or less enters the battlefield under your control, you get an experience counter. So that seems to be pretty easy as well, especially with tokens.
Way easier than Calumny.
Yeah, oh my gosh. At the beginning of combat on your turn, put X +1/+1 counters on another target creature you control, where X is the number of experience counters you have.
So you've got 5 experience counters. At the beginning of combat, you just choose one of your creatures and give them +5/+5 counters.
Hey, that's pretty big.
It's pretty crazy. And I think it's not just making them big. There's so many creatures, especially in these colors, that care about having +1/+1 counters on them. And you can sort of cheat the normal order of things. I'm talking about cards like Sage of Hours.
Oh, yeah. This is going to get you there. Sage of Hours was in Theros. Or Journey into Nyx specifically. One in the blue for a 1/1 creature human wizard. And heroic, whenever you cast a spell that targets it, you put a +1/+1 counter on it. But more importantly, remove all +1/+1 counters from Sage of Hours. For each 5 counters removed this way, take an extra turn after this one. Woo!
So let's just see how this goes. You have 5 counters, or 5 experience counters. At the beginning of combat, you put 5 experience counters onto Sage of Hours. You remove them, you get an extra turn. On the extra turn, what do? You put 5 counters on Sage of Hours, and you remove them, and you get an extra turn. So
yeah, that kind of just keeps going, doesn't
it? That's an infinite turn loop that's actually really easy to pull off. It doesn't even require that many counters. 5?
Yeah.
And by the way, Azuri, and I think this is kind of nuts, because a lot of the other ones say when you cast... In fact, Calumny says when you cast a creature spell, but not Azuri. Azuri says whenever a creature with power 2 or less enters the battlefield. So now you can just put 5 counters on it by doing like a X token spell, like one of those sapperling things that says put X sapperlings on, green and X. You could just on turn, you know, 6, put 5 counters on it.
All right, maybe Azuri is the most powerful. I just wasn't as impressed with his second ability, but I guess it really does pay off quite well.
It seems very broken. It's pretty crazy. A lot of people, there's a lot of stuff. Mycoloth is one that synergizes very well. Mycoloth is a 3/2 green for a 4/4 fungus. It has Devour 2. Devour is, as this creature enters the battlefield, you may sacrifice any number of creatures. This creature may enter the battlefield with twice that many +1/+1 counters. So you cast Mycoloth, you sacrifice 2 creatures, it gets +4/+4, but that's 4 +1/+1 counters. Then it says, at the beginning of your upkeep, put a 1/1 green Slapperling creature token onto the battlefield for each 1/1 counter on Mycoloth.
Hey, Azuri likes that.
Well, this is really snowbally. So you put Mycoloth out at the beginning of your combat, you put those 5 +1/+1 counters on it, and then on the next upkeep, you get 5 Slapperlings. What's that do? It puts 5 more experience counters on you, which means now you put 10 counters on Mycoloth.
Ugh,
next turn,
gross.
Yeah. At least this one, like, it takes a couple turns. Sage of Hours could literally be like, you play it, you go infinite. Michael Loth is like, well, it'll have to sit there for a turn before it really goes crazy.
Yeah, you go infinite barring just removal, but yeah. Still, I mean, you get that turn. Also, Sage of Hours could be the creature that puts you to 5 experience counters because it's a 1/1.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Pentavis is another great card, which they printed in Commander 2014. It's a 7-drop artifact creature construct. It enters the battlefield with 5+1/+1 counters on it. You can pay 1 to remove a counter from him and put a 1/1 artifact creature token with flying onto the battlefield. So as soon as you do this, you get another experience counter. It essentially pays itself back with Azuri's ability. And you can also pay 1 to sacrifice Dependent Vite and put a +1/+1 counter on Pentavis. So you, for 2 mana, you can essentially just keep putting a 1/1 out, sacking it, and putting it back on this guy. If you have like 6 mana, you could do this 3 times. It's still
you're
the same
size. You're
in green.
You might have 20 mana.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, what you would do
and
is...
And you can do it at instant speed.
It's a 5/5. I would just remove 4+1/+1 counters on it. You get 4 more experience counters on Azuri. 4 Azuri, sorry, because they go on the player. And then you just make your Pentavis right back to where it was or even bigger.
Yeah.
And you can just make so much value happen.
Yeah, and if you can do that on end step, too, is the crazy thing. Mm-hmm. So that it's like... And then what you do is you have all the Pentavites jump off, and then you just make one of them really big and kill somebody with it.
Yeah.
After you get to a certain point. I like this one you put on there, which is Wild Beastmaster.
Oh, yeah.
It's 2 and a green for a 1/1 human shaman. Whenever Wild Beastmaster attacks, each other creature you control gets +X/+X until end of turn, where X is Wild Beastmaster's power. So with Wild Beastmaster, at the beginning of combat, which is before you declare attackers, you put all the counters from Azuri onto Wild Beastmaster, and now it's like you put counters on every creature you control. And mm-hmm. by the way, you're playing probably a deck with a lot of tokens because... tokens give experience counters.
Yeah.
So you just go mega wide. It makes it like Craterhoof Behemoth, basically.
Yeah, minus the trample, which is notable. But still, if you have like a bunch of 1/1s out there that become 8/8s, like great, you're probably going to kill someone.
Or you got Pentavis, and you've been doing that crazy thing, and then this turn you just decide to just hop off 20 Pentavites.
Yeah.
And then give everyone Wild Beastmaster, boom.
Ugh.
Well, you can make the Pent. Yeah, exactly. It's... Yeesh. Azuri is really powerful. And I also think there's another way to build Azuri that we're not even talking about, which is Infect.
Infect is a great way to build Azuri. And look at this guy. He's actually, people have noted that he's actually wearing that artifact equipment that is the one that gives Infect.
The grafted
exoskeleton. Yeah, it really looks like he just has that on him.
Okay, so here's the other way to build Azuri, which is that what are you? You're in blue and you're in green. So your green's your Infect color, blue's your Proliferate color.
Mm-hmm.
Proliferate does add poison counters. Blue's also the unblockable color.
Oh, gosh.
What are Infect creatures? Usually they're small.
And they're
so
green
small
and blue
creatures
usually too.
Give you, yeah, and small creatures give you experience counters. And then what does an Infect deck have real problems with? Because in Commander it doesn't work very good. It's the pump spells. Because pump spells are just kind of bad in Commander because they're sort of card disadvantage. You know, you don't want to have these hands where you draw a bunch of pump spells and no Infect creatures. Well, guess what? Azuri is your pump spell. At the beginning of combat, you make your Infect creature, you know, just +5/+5. You don't even have to get that big. You just have to get it to 10. And then you give it unblockability with your blue part, or if you give it flying or something. And, I mean, that's another really brutal way. And actually, with Proliferate, too, you might even be able to just get...
Kill them...
With Proliferate, just get like 5 poison counters on him and get him the rest of the way there with Proliferate.
Yeah, that's the thing. I think Azuri is one of the best Infect commanders ever.
Yeah. I mean, Craig has to be just like licking his chops.
Yeah, this is insane. Because, I mean, Craig has like an Edric deck that's Infect. And I think it's great to have Edric because then you're drawing a lot of cards.
Yeah, but you have to go wide to do it, right? Whereas Azuri, like, you're going to kill people so much faster because he's just going to pump them up.
Yeah.
You know,
actually, I don't even know if Edric does it because it's combat damage. I think his Edric deck is more just unblockable creatures, but he definitely has a lot of blue-green Infect, and this is so powerful.
Yeah, there's just a few ways to build it, and I just think it's broken in any of those ways. I think this is the best one by quite a long shot, and we said before, I thought it would be because Proliferate works so well with experience
colors,
counters.
Yeah. And you're a blue-green kind of guy.
Oh, well, that's true, too.
I'm a red kind of dude. There's no red.
You're not going to have trouble with ramp. You're not going to have trouble with card draw.
You're not going to have trouble finding Infect creatures now that are those colors, too.
Yeah, true.
All right, so that does it for the 5 commanders that are going to be the front-of-the-box commanders. So you get an oversized foil card, I believe.
Yep, the experience counter commanders.
Yeah. Next up, we have non-experience counter commanders, and each of these are very different. They don't have sort of a theme across to all of them. three of them are flying and two of them have activated abilities that cost CMC of two. So I guess that's kind of a thing going on between them. Mm-hmm. But they're also, the mana costs are all over the place. The cheapest is two mana and the most expensive is five or six, sorry. So let's just go ahead and get started. Let's talk about Karlov of the Ghost Council. I'm now affectionately calling him like, just Carl.
This is Carl, that's good, is one of the Ghost Council.
Yeah.
Is this the first member of the Ghost Council that has his very own card?
I think so.
Where are the other dudes?
I don't know, but I'm really excited because maybe we'll get all of them.
I bet they're right off screen going, you jerk!
You got the spotlight first.
Yeah.
Carl is looking very grim.
Carl, that's good.
On his throne. Carl of the Ghost Council is white and a black, two total, for a 2/2 legendary creature spirit advisor. Whenever you gain life, put 2+1/+1 counters on Carl of the Ghost Council. And for black and a white, comma, remove 6+1/+1 counters from Karlov of the Ghost Council. Exile target creature. Haboom!
Kaboom! Six? That's a lot.
Yeah, but whenever you gain life, you put two. So you have to gain life three separate instances.
But it's instances. So if you gain 10 life with one card, that's still one instance.
Probably why you won't play that card in this deck.
Yeah.
You want to get like all these like cheap life gain cards enabled, right?
You need a bunch that are giving you little bits at a time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like yeah. Sun Droplet would be a card that would be really good in this deck.
I mean, you've got, what do we have down here? Soul Warden.
Yeah.
Soul's Attendant. Those are just like, anytime a creature comes in, you gain life. So that's, you're just going to gain a bunch of little bits of life.
Yeah, I think the key to this card is also finding ways to gain life across everyone else's turn. So yeah. That you are, it's not just dependent on your turn. So it's like whenever any creature enters the battlefield kind of thing, like... I believe Soul's Attendant does that. Whenever another creature enters the battlefield, you may gain one life.
Mm-hmm.
So like stuff like that's great because if someone just plays...
Yeah, Soul Warden does the same thing.
Like if someone's going to be Azuri-ing you, you know, and they're like, all right, I'm going to dump out 5/1/1s. You're like, great, I get 10+1/+1 counters on my guy because each of those guys came out separately.
And you get 10 life if you got Soul Warden, which means you get 20 counters on yeah. Carl, which means you can exile three creatures.
Yeah.
That's good math.
Well, no. It's every instance you gain life. So if it's 10 creatures, you do get 20. If it's 5 creatures, you get 10. It's not double the amount of life you gained.
No, that's what I'm saying. It's like if you have Soul Warden out and somebody makes 10
oh, right. With
things,
10 guys,
you'll
yeah,
get 10, you get 20. You get life 10 times.
Yeah, exactly.
You get 20 counters. You have to remove 6 to exile a creature, so you could exile 3 creatures for 6 mana.
You could kill Azuri.
You could. You could also kill something like Ulamog because it exiles.
Yeah, that's the best part. And it's actually similar to the other Taysa that... also exiles creatures. I believe it's Ghost Envoy, mm-hmm. or I forget what it is. She's all doing all kinds of things. Maybe it's Orzhov. No, it's Orzhov Scion. God, Taysa definitely is a busy lady.
Yep. Yeah, she is.
Yeah, but she also sacks three white creatures to exile a creature, essentially. So mm-hmm. it's a very similar ability. White-black is definitely the two colors that would be doing it.
But Taysa doesn't have to tap any mana when she does it. That's the thing that's sort of... make Carl, it'll keep him under wraps. I don't know. I'm not super excited about Carl.
Yeah, I think his ability is really sweet. I think if you were to build a deck around him, you could definitely do a lot of control on the board. But a lot of the times, too, it's also like, I mean, you can only exile so many target creatures before an enchantment is going to ruin your day or an artifact or something else.
Or you'll just get a bunch of counters on him, and then somebody will be like, all right, I utter end him.
Yeah, exactly.
And you're like, ah, crap, now I got to recast him, get more counters on him. It's not like the experience counters that just stay.
They stick around, yeah.
Yeah, I mean... he goes in an Alloro deck, probably.
Oh, he's definitely in an Alloro deck. Yeah. I think this card's really good in the 99.
Hey, you know what we're not thinking of? If you have Soul Warden and he just gets 20 counters, he's a 22-22, then you screw the Exxon creature. You just bash people in the face with him.
It's true. Voltron Karlov, where he's like, hey, I'm going to hit you for 14 now. Oh, you have a blocker? I'm going to exile it. I'll hit you for 8 instead.
Or I'll just put on my Whisper Silk cloak and I'll just, you know, I don't care. You know,
can you put a Whisper Silk cloak on a ghost? Look at this guy.
Yeah. What a ghost do but whisper?
I guess.
In silk cloaks.
I feel like the cloak would just fall right through him or whatever. Moving on.
Moving on. All right. We've got Arjun, the Shifting Flame. Arjun?
Arjun?
Could be Arjun.
Arme? Ar-August?
Arjun, the Arme. That's like left of the Raging Storm.
All right,
Arjun the Shifting Flame is 4, a blue, and a red. So 6 mana total for a 5/5 flying legendary Sphinx Wizard.
Yeah, so it's got a weird head on top of a cool looking Sphinx, like every Sphinx does.
Has a crazy ability. Whenever you cast a spell, put the cards in your hand on the bottom of your library in any order, then draw that many cards.
What?
So you Teferi's puzzle box every time you cast a spell?
Yeah.
Wow.
Which is insane to me.
Just you, not everybody.
Yeah, just you.
If it was everybody, that's something.
There's an enchantment that does this called Mind Moil, and this is basically Mind Moil, but on a 5/5 flyer.
This is crazy. There are ways to take advantage of it, obviously, the brainstorm type stuff.
Yeah.
Maybe like chase scroll the rack. Mind Scroll. Yeah, Scroll Rack. But still.
Although when you cast Scroll Rack, you immediately shuffle the rest
That's
of
That's a good point.
Well, you could cast it before having Arjun out, obviously.
That's true. Yeah. Well, what do we have written down for this guy? I don't even know. Oh, Scroll Rack. There we
go. Scroll Rack, yeah. Alhamrat's Archive.
Oh, there you go.
So Alhamrat's Archive means you're basically drawing two. Every time you draw a card, you draw another one.
That's actually really good.
Yeah, so you're going to potentially be in danger of also milling yourself if you draw too many, if that makes sense. If you have like 50 cards in your hand and then you trigger him once, you're going to mill yourself out before you put the bottom card.
Oh, that's interesting.
So you have to be a little careful there. Yes, if you would draw a card,
but it'll be
first
exponential,
one.
Right? It'll double every time. So if you have 6 cards, you cast a spell, you'll actually draw 10.
Yep.
Then you cast a spell, you actually draw 18.
18, yeah.
Oh, that's a good combo.
Yeah, you're getting. I mean, you're seeing your deck. I think this is great. However, I obviously with instant speed stuff, I think it's really good. But I think it's the best when you can set your hand up so that you're not totally like losing the card that you really still want to keep. You know.
Yeah. True.
If you have all instants and you have a bunch of mana, for instance, if this was in the Mizzix deck. You would cast an instant and then, or a sorcery, and then in response to it, cast everything else out of your hand that you want. You know. However, the only problem with this is that if you only have one card in your hand, you cast it and you draw nothing.
Oh, that's a good point.
So it's like a weird balance here for Arjun because it is great to have a new grip of stuff when you don't like your current one, or if you're trying to search for something. But you also have to balance that with like, do you want to have a really full hand when you do this, or do you want to have a half full hand? It's great, though, when you have a bunch of lands that you don't need.
Well, geez, I would want a full hand, and I would want to get to Alhamrat's Archive as fast as possible and a few other cards yeah. like that. And then once you have that, you're good. You don't even care because you're just going to double the amount of cards.
Yeah.
You know, this makes me think of... There are some cards, and I can't think of the names right now because I'm doing this off the cuff, which is always a bad idea, but I'm going to do it anyway, that, say, do damage to your opponents for each card you draw,
yeah.
things like that. That would be really good in a
Walking
deck like
Archive.
This because... Yeah, because you could be like, well, Walking Archive does it, just makes you draw extra cards. Makes
it
everybody draw extra cards. No.
Oh,
but there
okay.
are cards that do damage for cards that you draw. They're sort of the inverse of like Underworld Dreams, which does damage to opponents for cards they draw.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you could cast a spell, draw a bunch of cards, cast a spell, draw a bunch of cards, cast
a
spell.
Damage,
yeah, and
yeah.
do a ton of damage. So,
you're saying this needs to go in your Chromat deck?
It's probably going to go into my Chromat deck because, yeah, we'll see.
It's an interesting one. I think I have to play with this more to really understand how to do it best. Josh's Chromat deck, by the way, is a Nekusar deck.
Right. It's just 5 color. So this is a really interesting card. There's probably more things like Alhamrat's Archive that we're not thinking of right now. Mm-hmm. So that's another thing you can definitely tweet at us, although it won't enter you in the contest. The contest is only for Kalemni. Sorry. All right. On to the next one.
Yeah. Mazarik, Kraul, Death Priest.
Is he right. related to the Deathrite Shaman? Because it looks like it.
This guy's like the scariest looking thing I've ever seen in my life. He's like an end boss in freaking Diablo
it
over
does.
Here. It's like half bug, half... I don't know what it is.
Half right. alien.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Half Prometheus.
He's 3, a black and a green, for a 2/2 legendary creature insect shaman that has flying. And he says, whenever a player sacrifices another permanent, put a +1/+1 counter on each creature you control.
Wow.
Yeah. So
this card's pretty good.
Yeah, and people sack stuff a lot in EDH.
And it can be you.
It can be you as well. So again, Eldrazi Scions and Eldrazi Spawns yep. are very powerful here. I believe Fetchlands.
Sacrifices another permanent. That's a really good point.
Yep.
Yep. Even like Evolving Wilds, Terramorphic
yeah.
Expanse.
Yeah.
Other players fetch lands. Wow, I didn't even think of that. That's absolutely what happens.
Yep. You would clearly play this with a Grave Pact or Dictate of Erebos, cards that say whenever you a permanent you control, a creature you control dies, everyone else has to sacrifice a creature.
Yep. Fleshbag Marauders, again, very good with this card.
Yep.
Because you automatically sack it when it comes in or sack something else, make your whole team bigger. I think a lot of Eldrazi spawns and Scions, and then a lot of stuff like Flashbang Marauder, because the Eldrazi spawns and scions also serve as your team that you're pumping mm-hmm. when you want to. So what you can do is you can get like 10 Eldrazi scions out, play Masurek, sacrifice three of them, give all of them +3/+3, attack with the rest.
Yeah. And again, you can give everyone insta-haste with green. This is pretty powerful.
This seems very good. I'm very excited to put it in my Marchesa deck, because once again, my Marchesa deck is actually a five-color deck.
Josh doesn't have a single two-color deck.
I have a couple. I have Joyra.
That's a lie. It's a five-color Joyra deck, because you wanted to cast Jackal Hops in Joyra, too. It's not. Yeah, I think Masurek's really sweet. Again, because it's green and black, you know they're going to build the commander deck around being token-themed, because both Marin and Masurek love the idea of creatures dying.
I mean, no matter which one
specifically,
no matter which one you choose, the other one will work in that deck, right? Those two so far work the best of any of the two with the same color pair that we've come across.
Yeah, I would say Mizzix and Arjun work really well together too, though.
They do, but not as like Mizzix is helping you cast instants and sorceries. Arjun doesn't care about instants or sorceries.
Yeah, just anytime
you
cast.
It does
spell.
Help you cycle through your deck, but yeah, I think Masurek and Marin. Are they like sisters or something? Because they have almost the same name too.
They do not look like they are related, Josh.
Well, here's what happened. They got switched at birth or separated.
Gotcha.
And then, yeah.
Masurek grew up with normal human parents and Marin grew up with like weird spider spawn demon looking.
Masurek got put in the basket and pushed down the river because the Egyptians were about... No, that's a different story.
Egyptians. The Naga kicked him out or whatever, because they were like, he has wings.
Yeah, this card is really, really good. I don't have anything else to say about it. This is more exciting than Calumny.
Do we mention it's flying?
It's a 5-mana 2/2 flyer.
Yeah. I mean, you could put it... The counters go on him as well, so he could just get really big.
That's a good point.
Very scary.
That's why I like spawns and scions, because you can sack them on demand for the mana, and you don't even have to use the mana. You can be like, whatever, So Awakening Zone from Beyond are just amazing.
Yep.
Yeah, that seems like a deck.
Hey, before we continue the rest of the episode, hope you guys are enjoying it so far. We would like to let you guys know that, again, the sponsor for today's show is Loot Crate. Yes, Loot Crate, the one and only Loot Crate. You guys have probably heard of subscription-based box services in the past. There are ones for beauty. There are ones for dogs. This one is for the inner geek and gamer inside all of us. And again, I've known Matthew and the people that run Loot Crate for a very long time. I think they're extremely trustworthy, and I really believe in these guys, and I really love the service that they're bringing to the world. Because for me, I subscribe to Loot Crate because, you know, for under $20 a month, I get this sweet box of stuff that I can both help decorate the office with, give to friends, and keep stuff for myself that I really love. In the past, they've done items from Star Wars, Marvel, The Walking Dead, Legend of Zelda, all things that I love. This month, they're doing a combat-themed box, so they have items from Blizzard, Fallout 4, Capcom, Hunger Games, etc., etc. And every single month, it's different, and they always try to put about $40 plus worth of stuff in the box. So for under $20, you're really getting a value if you love this kind of stuff. You can go subscribe to the service right now and actually get $3 off by going to lootcrate.com/command and entering the code command to save $3 on any new subscription. If you guys want to get in on this month's box, make sure you subscribe by November 19th at 9 p.m. Pacific time to receive this month's crate. Also, good news, they ship to over 13 different countries. So if you're an international listener of the Command Zone, you can probably get this box as well. So guys, make sure you check it out, lootcrate.com/command. All right, let's get back to the show.
The next one is Anya, Merciless Angel.
Anyang, spoiled by a wedge from the mana source.
Oh yeah, what's up, Wedge?
What up, Wedge? Congrats.
I don't know if you're like this, but I feel some ownership over the cards we've spoiled.
Yeah, totally.
So like Elle, my girlfriend, and I, we've been opening a lot of Battle for Zendikar because she's really good at pulling expeditions. And so we've been opening a ton of it. We've gotten like 8 expeditions so far. But every time the Sanctum of Ugin comes up, I'm like, oh, that's our card.
Nice.
Like, it's like, oh, that's our card.
I say and it now, too, when I see it in draft, I see it passed around. I'm like, who's passing our card around? Come on, guys.
That's our card. It's like we didn't do anything except for tell people about it. But
actually, both of our cards that we, for the last two cards, get passed around in draft a lot.
Nobody takes Great Aurora or Sanctum of Ugin. Well, that's because we're commander players.
That's right.
All right, so Wedge's card, again, Anya, Merciless Angel, 3, a red and a white. So this is our second Boros General. Let's see if it's better. 4/4 flyer for 5, not bad, Angel. Anya gets +3/+3 for each opponent whose life total is less than half his or her starting life total.
Hey.
Okay. As long as an opponent's life total is less than half his or her starting life total, Anya has indestructible.
Wow. So if only one person is at 20 life or less, She's a 7/7 flying indestructible.
It has to be 19 or less.
Because it's less than half. Sorry, yeah. Correct. Yeah, so 19 or less. That's... I think this is really powerful. It's not the red-white general I still want, but...
It's not when you think about it that much different than Gisela or any of the other ones, because what is it? It wants you to do the same thing that all those other generals want you to do, which is it wants you to be aggressive and zero in and attack somebody. This one, maybe a little bit more, wants you to do like indiscriminate damage, like play cards that do 4 damage to all players or something.
Yeah.
But it's not, I don't know.
It's in the 99. This card is great if you want in Gisela, right? This card is awesome in decks that are going to get your opponents down super low, and then you're like, they're like, gosh, I can't deal with that. Or if I can deal with that, now I can't deal with a, you know, if like 3 players are below, I can't deal with a freaking 13-13
indestructible flyer.
Yeah. So Anya gets, she is truly merciless once the game really gets going, but I don't know if you really want to play her as a general, because it feels like everyone's just going to know what you want to do and then they'll just focus in on you.
That's a really good point, because if they see this sitting in your command zone, and then they're going to be way less likely to do damage to each other because they don't want to get below that half life total, because it's almost like if somebody else is playing that and you and I are in the game, if I hit you, I'm almost helping the other guy make his general bigger.
I mean, you may want to do that. You know, just because it's like sweet, maybe. But then again, nothing ever says Anya needs to swing at the person who has that low life total, that she might want to get more players underneath that life total.
Yeah, but so. I'm just saying, if it's me and I'm not playing Anya, but somebody else is, if I hit you, it's sort of making Anya bigger. So do I really want to help him? I might as well just hit him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's an interesting thing.
I mean, that's why you'd play cards like Heartless Hidetsugu in this deck. It's that's... 3 in a red, and you tap it. It deals damage to each player equal to half that player's life total rounded down. So if everyone's cracked a couple of fetches or played a couple of shock lands,
or just somehow taken 1 or 2 damage,
all of a sudden it's just like, hello, I'm here.
She goes, blah, 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 blah. So that's Bloodlust, not
Merciless Angel.
Murlocs and Bloodlust sound a lot the same,
pretty much.
All right.
Quietest Spike. You could also play that equipment in this deck. You just want to get players. I mean, I don't know. EDH is not a fast game.
It's the same thing that every red-white deck wants to do, which is quickly do damage.
Yeah. I was really hoping we would see more chaos-based stuff for red-white, or something that's like more... I guess red-white isn't as much chaos, but more maybe the red idea of exiling cards and playing them from the top of your library.
We just need anything that has
a little bit more of that.
Just give us something that we can't already do.
Yeah.
All right. The last general we're going to talk about and that we know about so far is Kaseto, Orochi Archmage.
Kaseto.
You say Kaseto, I say Kaseto.
I'll just play it on my VCR instead.
Kaseto, Orochi, Archmage?
I don't know. I don't care.
I am just screwing. I don't know. I'm sure I'll get yelled at. Anyway, one a blue and a green.
Orochi, Archmage.
Okay. So 3 mana for a 2/2 snake wizard. Has an activated ability. Pay green and a blue. Target creature can't be blocked this turn. If that creature is a snake, it gets +2/+2 until end of turn.
Snake Tribal, baby.
So Snake Tribal until now was basically mono green, but now we get blue, which is actually huge because blue is the card draw color and also the proliferate color, which goes with Infect, which Infect wants unblockable. We talked about this already.
I looked it up. There are a lot of snakes that have Infect.
Of course, the original creatures that gave poison counters were snakes.
Which is great. This card's sweet.
This card is pretty good, actually.
It's another Craig Blanchett card. It's freaking just ready to be Snake Tribal Infect. Maybe I'll just build a Snake Tribal Infect deck for like $3 and play it every
I think there's something to be said for just not even worrying too much about the snake part and just being like, I have unblockability on a stick and I'm playing the colors that have Infect and Proliferate.
You'd also play like Fasa and other cards like that.
Yeah.
But it gets +2/+2 if it's a snake.
No, I mean, you put the Infect snakes in there, but you just don't put normal snakes that aren't Infect in there?
No, you definitely don't, unless they have something going for them.
I mean, Snake Tribal's a thing, too, so this is just a Snake Tribal deck also.
Yeah, there's
not
a card
necessarily
like,
Infect.
There's like Oron Viper, which is 1 green-green. It's a 1/3 snow creature snake, and whenever it deals combat damage to a player, you can draw a card.
There you go.
So it's kind of got... You would put Edric in this deck as well, because you're just getting creatures through. Be a lot of fun. I'll build an Infect deck finally. It'll be with the Snake Wizard. Actually, no, it's
I'm doing it with Azuri.
Yeah. Who are we kidding? I mean, maybe you stick Kaseido in there, but maybe. Actually, no, Kaseido's really good in Azuri because it's just another way to make him block ability.
And gives an experience counter.
Yeah, because it's a 2-2.
2-2, yep.
Yeah. All right. Okay, that's the those are the 10 commanders that we know from the set so far. Really exciting stuff. There's some really good cards in here.
Really good stuff.
Really good stuff.
I think Azuri's borderline too powerful.
Yes, I agree.
I think Daxos and Mizzix are both very powerful. Marin, too.
Yeah.
Sorry, Boros.
Well, you know, someone could win a commander deck.
Come up with something awesome.
Super awesome.
I mean, if you come up with an idea that makes me actually want to build a Boros deck, you automatically win.
Yeah, Josh will actually send himself to your house to give you a high five. He promised that to me before we started the podcast.
It's not true. Don't listen to Jimmy.
Okay, so we have...
He's drunk.
I'm wasted on cards.
Still one back with me, dog.
The power level is real. Before we start, I'm going to see if it's been spoiled yet, and I don't think so. Okay. So the next mechanic of series of cards, there are five total, but we only know four of them so far.
This is like the new mechanic, or the new keyword, I guess, because experience counter is kind of a mechanic.
Yeah. They've done sort of this for every set. So Join Forces was one of them. What else do we have?
Join Forces. Good enough. this one's Myriad. So Myriad reads, whenever this creature attacks, for each opponent other than the defending player, you may put a token that's a copy of this creature onto the battlefield, tapped and attacking that player or a planeswalker he or she controls. Exile the tokens at the end of the combat. This is a little complicated. What happens is I attack. Let's say there are four players, mm-hmm. me, Jimmy, and two others. I have a creature with Myriad. I attack Jimmy with it.
Why? Whoa. Stop.
I get copies.
Why are you swinging at me, dude?
I get copies attacking the other two players. So now I have one copy of that creature attacking all three players, although only the one with Myriad, the original one, mm-hmm. will still be there after combat because you exile the tokens at end of combat.
Yeah. So it's interesting. It sort of gets rid of the whole, like, who should I swing at first thing?
Because that's interesting.
It's going to come at everyone. It also might just make enemies with everyone, too.
Yeah, normally this type of effect is not actually as good as it sounds because attacking everyone at once is actually kind of dumb. Like, let's imagine that you're, I don't know, Germany. And for some reason, you decide that I'm going to go ahead and rage war with Belgium, France, and the UK all at once.
You know
people... Oh, wait, they tried that in World War I. It didn't work out good.
You know people named Germany, Belgium, and France? What a cool group of dudes and dudettes. Wow.
So you don't usually want to fight a war on like that many fronts.
Yeah, unless you're getting something out of it.
Yeah, we'll talk a little bit about that. But let's talk about this. So it's a cycle. Each color has one creature mm-hmm. with Myriad. I don't want to read each one, so let's just go through keywords. Like sure. The white one is a 4/4 flying vigilance.
With Myriad.
The blue one is a 3/3, but when it deals combat damage to a player, you draw a card.
Okay.
So that one you could maybe find an opening where I'm going to attack this person, and I'll also hit with, you know, one other person can't block it, and so I'll draw two cards.
Yeah, actually, the nice thing about Brewbirth Viper is that it doesn't have Death Touch, right? So if someone can block it easily because it's just a 3/3, they will.
Mm-hmm.
But the person that does hit, you get to draw a card off it. So that actually kind of minimizes the impact of Myriad because no one's going to be pissed at you for doing it.
They just block and nothing happens.
They block it, yeah, but they do see you draw cards. So it's kind of like, it's a little powerful over there.
Banshee of the Dread Choir is a 4/4 with Myriad, and when it deals combat damage to a player, that player discards a card.
This one will make no one happy.
that one's just gonna make people mad. And then Warchief Giant is a 5/3 with haste and Myriad.
Oh.
So that's just the aggro one.
Yeah, no thanks. It's cool though, the art on all of these has the creature, and then it has two copies of it, sort of in like a ghostly form.
Like they're splitting up. They're going all Matrix.
Yeah, Warchief Giant, the copies all have different weapons too, which is kind of cool.
Wait, this keyword should have totally been Matrix.
Yeah.
Matrix. maybe it doesn't fit in flavor, but it would be sweet. And it's all just different drawings of Keanu.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, just Keanu from different movies too.
So he's like from Speed, that's not even from the Matrix, whatever.
Why is he Constantine?
We don't know the green one.
I'm going to guess it.
Yeah, okay. Wait, let me think here. So what...
I think it's got to do with ramp, right?
I think it just has trample.
Just has trample? I'm going to go super high power level. It's going to be 3 green. It's going to be a 4/4 Myriad.
You're getting really specific.
It's going to be a boar.
Okay. Do you know what the card is? Like, I'm I cheated somehow.
And whenever it deals combat damage to a player, you may search your library for a basic land card and put it into the play tapped.
When it deals combat damage. Doesn't have trample?
No trample. If it had trample, that would be absurd. It has trample.
Basic land. It's doable. It's possible. Actually, I like yours better than mine. Mine's boring.
What was yours?
Mine was, it just has trample. It's just like a 5-5 with trample.
Or maybe it'll gain life, too. Green likes doing that.
Usually doesn't have life link, though.
Every time it deals... let's make it as busted as possible. Every time it deals combat damage, destroy target enchantment target player controls. Just any enchantment.
And it has trample, so they can't even really block
it. Every time it deals combat damage, essentially cast Beast Within on something.
Realistic. Thank you for the 12-play email we're about to get, Jimmy.
Out of the bet, of all these, Broodbirth Viper is by far the best.
Yeah, I think so. It's liable to make people the least mad and do the most good for you.
Yeah. A 3-3 is not that intimidating if it's not hitting everyone, you know. If people can just block it.
So that is the Myriad cycle. There's also a card, and this may be the single most talked about card yet. Yeah. At least besides the generals, it definitely is. This card's a little bit insane. So it is Blade of Selves. It's a two drop artifact. My accent's getting bad. It costs 4 to equip, so that seems insane. But equipped creature has Myriad.
Oh, whatever. It's just Myriad. Oh, wait.
So let's just say you did something, I don't know, like put it on a Moldrifter, which is pretty, like, that's not even shooting the moon here. And then I attack Jimmy with my Moldrifter, and then the other three players, I get to bring in a copy of Moldrifter and draw 6 cards. It doesn't even matter if it hits them.
Yep. Enter the battlefield effects with Blade of Selves.
Insane,
yeah. Myriad, because they're entering the battlefield.
Yep.
They come into play. So we tweeted Craterhoof Behemoth.
Craterhoof Behemoth is insanity because...
just one is enough. Imagine if you made 3 more.
Well, sometimes, every once in a while, and this is rare, you'll have Craterhoof in your hand, but you'll be like, crap, I only have 2 creatures. So if I play it, then it's just +3/+3 in trample. It's not that great.
Yeah.
Well, if you've got Blade of Selves, and also, by the way, Craterhoof has haste. So
yeah.
You play it. Let's say you only have 3 creatures, and you're playing in a game with 5 people. You play Craterhoof, it gives everything +4/+4, then you attack, it drops 4 more Craterhoof Behemoths into play, yep. And they each give everything +8/+8.
Yeah.
So that's +32 on top of the +4, that's +36 and trample to all 8 of your creatures. You kill everyone. Like, and that's just with Innocuous Board of 3 creatures.
Yeah, that's insane. There's also like a weird situation where you could play Craterhoof early and be like, I can't do anything with it. Mwah. And then you play Blade of Selves in the Quiver and be like, I can do everything.
I kill everyone.
That will not happen very often. Blade of Selves is absurd. This card, I think, is the best card in the entire set.
This can go in so many decks. It's kind of like Rite of Replication, mm-hmm. But it's colorless.
Yeah.
And repeatable.
Repeatable. I would play Masterwork of Ingenuity in this deck just to have another Blade of Selves.
Yeah, it's pretty
right?
good.
It's like
it's the kind of thing you just play like Steel Shaper's Gift, even if it's the only equipment in your deck. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. It's
like Skullclamp for a token deck. You just have to have it if you're like a value deck with Enter the Battlefield effects.
Yeah, that card may be borderline too powerful. We will see.
Just maybe.
Yeah, it's pretty good. There's another cycle.
Right.
And once again, we only know 4 of the 5 at this point.
Yep. This is the Confluence cycle. They are instants or sorceries. They all cost... They cost 4, 3... No, they cost 5 or 6 or 4 mana. They're all different. I thought they're going to be the same as the...
Yeah, the mana cost is varied.
Just don't listen to what I'm saying. The pattern so far is that they all have 2 of the color that they are in. They're all monocolored. And these all say choose 3, and you may choose the same mode more than once. So we've seen modal spells in the past, ones that say choose 1,
choose 2.
Like Dromoka's Command, or choose 2, like Cryptic Command. Confluence is choose 3, and they are all very powerful.
Well, and on like Cryptic Command, you can't choose the same mode twice.
Yes.
Where on the Confluences, you can choose the same mode up to 3 times. Yeah. So, well, let's read one.
Righteous Confluence. It is the white version. 3 white for a sorcery. Choose 3. You may choose the same mode more than once. The first mode is put a 2/2 white knight creature token with vigilance onto the battlefield. The second mode is exile target enchantment. And the third mode is you gain 5 life. So you can choose 3 of these in any combination.
So you can gain 15 life, or you can gain 10 life and exile an artifact, or you can make...
enchantment.
Or sorry, yeah. Exile Enchantment. Or you can make two Vigilant Knights and gain 5 life. Like, you get it.
The flexibility is great here. 5 mana also for just exiling 3 enchantments is pretty good.
Not bad. I mean, we play Return to Dust, which basically does 2.
For 4
it
mana.
It does do artifacts also, but...
Yeah, it's also an instant if you don't cast it during your main phase.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just saying, like, it is similar, and sometimes just gaining 15 life...
Yeah. Here's like, the thing with enchantments, though, is that you're okay killing enchantments at sorcery speed, usually.
That's true.
It's not like something you have to immediately get rid of, unless the player just goes off, but, I mean, usually you have the chance to get rid of someone's, like... Sylvan Library, you know, just there's lots of stuff out there that just sits and gains a player advantage over the whole game that you want to have answers for. And this card is, I think, I like this card a lot.
Yeah, I think this card's okay. I like the concept of the confluences. I don't think this is the best one.
I'm literally only playing this to have exile 3 enchantments.
Yeah, that's, and that may be worth it.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, the nice thing about this too is like cards like Decimate, where you have to choose different targets. And if you don't have enough, you can't play it. This, you will, no matter what, always be able to at least exile one thing. If there's nothing to exile, then you still have, it can still do something.
Yeah, you can just gain life. Yeah, that's true. The blue one is Mystic Confluence. It's 3 and 2 blue for same thing. Choose 3. You may choose the same mode more than once. You have a choice between counter target spell, unless its controller plays 3, so mana leak. Return target creature to its owner's hand.
Ooh.
So that is unsummon and draw a card. And also, this one's an instant, obviously, because it has counter spell on it.
So it's Jace's Ingenuity.
This is kind of Cryptic Command-y.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't always counter the spell because they have to not have 3 mana available. But, and stay with me here, if they have 5 mana available, you can choose that mode twice.
Yeah.
And still counter the spell and draw a card. So it kind of can be Cryptic Command. Mm-hmm. I think this one's actually very good. And... just return 3 creatures to their owner's hand can occasionally win you the game as an instant.
Agreed. This is actually really sweet.
Yeah.
This seems like one of the more powerful counter spells ever because it for 5 mana, it can pretty much counter anything because you can make something have to pay 9 extra.
Yeah, right? Worst case scenario, it just counters something unless they've got 9 mana.
This card is really sweet in Mizzix of the Ismagnus.
And very often you're going to go counter that, draw 2 cards.
Mm-hmm.
So,
oh, right. Oh, gosh.
That's better than Cryptic Command. I gotta be honest too, I don't run Cryptic Command in like 5 color decks because 3 blue is just too tough.
It is tough, yeah.
Yeah, but 2 blue is fine, so I would definitely run Cryptic Command if it was, say, 2 and 2 blue. And this is 3 and 2 blue. It's close.
Yeah, I like this card a lot.
Yeah.
We do not know the black version.
Do you
want to
predict?
Let's read the other ones first.
Okay.
Fiery Confluence. This is mine. This is it. Oh, by the way, all the art on these are also very similar. It's a mage or a wizard in a circular formation, and it's being cast out in 3 directions from
A little like the new Snapcaster Mage.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
Might be the same artist. I have no idea because I'm not going to zoom in that far.
It is the same artist for all 4 of these.
Probably the 5th one.
That's
my prediction. Same artist.
Same artist?
Yeah.
That's a good prediction. It's not. I drew it. Fiery Confluence. 2 and red for a sorcery. Choose 3. You may choose the same mode more than once. The first mode is Fiery Confluence deals 1 damage to each creature. Or Fiery Confluence deals 2 damage to each opponent, or destroy target artifact. So red likes wrecking artifacts. That's cool. 4 mana, do 6 damage to each opponent. Okay. 4 mana, do 3 damage to each creature.
That's kind of crappy.
4 mana, destroy 3 artifacts. That's pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, the destroy 3 artifacts, there's always going to be mana rocks and stuff to destroy. Yeah. You know, with like Pyromancer's Goggles, you could... do 12 damage to everybody.
That's pretty good.
4 mana.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. I don't know. It's only okay.
Yeah.
I wish it did. If it did 2 damage, if the mode was 2 damage to each creature, so that this could do 6 damage to everything, why would that be overpowered? Wrath of God just kills everything for 4 mana.
Yeah, it's true.
So I wish that first mode was 2 damage to each creature, then it would be way better.
Yeah, which basically says unless you have ways of copying this and playing it another version of it at the same time, it's not really the best.
Yeah, it's not great. But if you are in a deck, like you said, Mizzix may want something like this because he's going to have a lot of ways to copy things, and you'll just get an experience counter, and maybe just destroying 3 artifacts is not bad.
Yeah, not bad.
The green one is Verdant Confluence.
I think this one's really good.
It's 4 and 2 green, so it's the most expensive, although we don't know the black one again. choose 3, put 2 1/1 counters on target creature, return target permanent card from your graveyard to your hand, search your library for a basic land card, put it onto battlefield tapped, then shuffle your library. So we got Regrowth, we've got, what is that? It's not Kodama's Reach. It's Rampant Growth.
Yes.
And then you've got, what's put 2-1 with Kenny Harris. Okay, my analogies are not working out. But anyway, the second two modes are definitely good. Regrowth is very strong. I play that in almost every
triple regrowth.
Deck. So just being able to be like, oh, I get these two cards back from my graveyard, and then I put a basic land into play. Pretty good.
I think this is really, really good in five-color decks.
Yeah, because every once in a while you're like, I just fixed my mana.
Yeah, I think that's really important.
Although five-color decks don't have a lot of basic lands.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I usually try and run one each. But
definitely three color. It's very good.
Yeah, I like this card a lot. Just
regrowth is just strong. Just
triple regrowth for six mana is great. Eternal Witness gets you one card for three mana. This gets you three for six.
Yeah, although the Eternal Witness is reusable. But what if one of those cards is Eternal Witness?
I'll make this reusable too. Yeah, well, no. Sure. One of these cards is.
Here's what you do: Verdant Confluence,
E Witness.
Get E Witness and something else back. Then you play E Witness, get Confluence back.
You get E Witness and Grimoire of Murasa that you didn't exile when it died.
There you go. And then you play Witness, get Confluence back, play Murasa, get something else. Like, you could set up a loop where you're just basically anything that goes to your graveyard, you can get back.
Throw a Mother of Den Protector.
No, I like Mother of Runes.
Mother of Runes. You don't want Mother of Runes. You want Maternal Witness. That's
there you go. Oh, yeah. Den Protector, yeah.
Yeah.
No, I want Mother of Runes.
I do,
what are you talking about?
That card's great. What is the black version of it? It is something.
Okay, one is return a creature card from your graveyard to your hand.
Okay.
One is a drain effect.
Yep. I agree with that.
Your opponents all lose one life and you gain that much life, maybe?
I'm going to go for two.
Two? Well, wow, that's a lot.
Yeah, because Fiery Confluence says deals two damage to each opponent.
But you don't gain the life.
I mean, so what? You know? Okay. Maybe it just says you gain two life, you know, instead of you drain everyone, you just. Everyone loses two life and you gain two.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Oh, I could go with that. What's the third one?
It's got to be destroy something, or it's going to be like draw a card, lose a life kind of thing.
I mean, it's crazy to say like destroy target non-black creature because that's just way more powerful than destroy artifact or enchantment.
You think it's a sorcery or an instant? I think it's sorcery.
It's probably a sorcery. Each player discards a card, maybe?
Ooh, yeah.
It's the Liliana.
Yeah, each player discards a card. Each player loses two life and you gain two life. And
return target creature card from your graveyard to your hand?
Battlefield. No.
Battlefield? That's way too strong.
I got to dream big, man. Sometimes you got to dream a little bigger, Josh.
Okay, well, by the time you're listening to this, this card will have been spoiled and we're going to look either very smart or only slightly less smart.
I prefer to think that we're going to look very smart, Josh. Okay, let's talk about some other exciting cards. We've covered basically the highlights.
We can't talk about every single one.
Yeah, we can't talk about every single one, so we're just going to choose a couple of these that we like. Obviously, we can't spend the entire time talking about Rite of the Raging Storm. I know, guys, it is all the rage right now.
We talked about it for like half an episode, so if you go back one episode, you can hear everything we say about our card, Rite of the Raging Storm. Also, look for the prequel soon, which is Left of the Raging Storm.
Yeah, Left of the Raging Storm. Yeah. And it's because right is spelled R-I-T-E here. Left is like L-E-P-H-T. Left of the Raging Storm.
Where'd he go? He left.
Yeah, someone said it was like the Mingle Malingo.
Yeah.
Right of the Raging Storm, which I thought was very...
It's like the everybody gets an O-4.
Yeah. Oh, God. That's as it. Defender, yeah, you still have to sacrifice it. All right.
Okay, I'll go first with the other cards we're going to talk about. Command Beacon. So this is the only land spoiled so far that's new. It's a land. You can tap it to add a colorless, or you can tap and sacrifice Command Beacon, and then you can put your commander into your hand from the command zone.
Sweet.
So it's a way around commander tax one time.
Uh-huh. Unless you have a way to get your lands back.
Oh, that's a good point. If you've got Crucible or Titania, that kind of thing. Then you can sort of skip commander tax, which I think is really important because a lot of problems that generals have is that if they die once or twice and they're in certain colors, notably those that don't have green, it can be very hard to get up to the amount of mana to cast them again. Yeah. I can see this being a staple depending on your meta.
Yeah, I think Command Beacon is really sweet.
Yeah.
It depends on your deck. Yeah. Again, if my five-color deck's not going to play this because I rarely play the general.
Right.
But, man, this is cool.
Yeah, if you're very reliant on your general and you don't have a ton of mana rampy stuff in the deck, or it just doesn't have ways to get up to the 10, 12 mana,
yeah,
then this is really good.
Or if you find that your general, you play like Omnath and everyone just immediately kills it, you know, this is just a great way to get him back. You know, it seems really sweet.
This is really good in Joyra, because Joyra's in, again, mm-hmm. red and blue don't have a lot of great ramp. Wait, so what happens is she gets killed twice and you're like, geez, how am I ever going to get up to 7 mana? And if I do, by that time, I'm not, like, I'm going to have to suspend things for 4 turns. So really, the game's not going to go 13 turns, so I can't win anymore.
Yeah. Command Beacon's really cool. I like this card a lot.
Yeah.
The next card that I want to talk about is the... I'm going to talk about Pathbreaker Ibex.
Oh, yeah.
Also known as Crater Goat Behemoth.
Crater Goat
Behemoth. It's a creature goat for 4 and a green. It's a 3/3. Whenever Pathbreaker Ibex attacks, creatures you control gain trample and get +X/+X until end of turn, where X is the greatest power among creatures you control. I don't understand the flavor. It's like a goat runs really fast at someone, and then like everyone's like, yeah! And they look towards the biggest guy, and he's like, you can be as big as me now.
That was a good story.
It was a great story.
I don't know the flavor either.
Also, this 3/3 is like breaking through like bamboo. It's not
at the very least, impressive. All your creatures get +3/+3 because that's the Pathbreaker.
This is cool though, man.
And trample.
Another overrun creature, and this guy is hardcore. Look at this thing.
I think it's good. It costs 6 mana.
Yeah.
It doesn't have haste. You know, Craterhoof is so good because of the haste.
Yeah, I mean, if your deck just wants to run stuff over, Pathbreaker is like a greater... It's not greater. It's like a nice option in case you don't draw your Craterhoof. If you just need more of that overrun effect, I think this is a really nice one. If you have like universal haste and Granters, it's also a goat. That's why I put it on this list.
Meh.
Meh.
Is that a sheep or a goat?
That was a sheep.
Okay, I don't really know the difference.
I don't know what that was either.
That was a goat. Wait, do sheep?
Meh.
Okay, do goat.
Meh. I used to live across when I was growing up. I don't know if that's the right goat. I know the screaming goat's like, meh!
Yeah, I was going to say, goats kind of sound like people. I've seen that video where the goats really sound like people.
Yeah, I used to grow up, when I was in Seattle and I grew up, I was right next to a farm and there was a goat there once. And I would look over the fence and go like, meh, at it. And it would bah back. And I would just sit there doing it for like half an hour.
Wow, there wasn't a lot to do in your area, in your neighborhood.
No, I stayed at home a lot. I played cards.
That was two cool goat stories, everybody, if you're counting.
Yeah. Those.
Bastion Protector was one I had on the list. It's 2 and a white for a 3/3. So it's already pretty good. 3 mana, 3/3. It says, commander creatures you control get +2/+2 and have indestructible.
That's ridiculous.
It's pretty...
That's awesome.
It's pretty good, and you can play it in advance of your commander. And then if they want to kill your commander, they have to kill the Bastion Protector first, unless, of course, they exile or bounce or whatever. But still, it's very, very good.
It's like a Mother of Runes that's good for creatures that want to attack a lot.
It's like a what?
Sorry. Mother of Runes!
The funny thing is, to talk that loud, you have to lean so far back from
really
the mic.
Mother of Runes!
It's the Mother of Runes! If it's not Scottish, it's crap!
Yeah. I like this card a lot.
This card is very good, I think. And because there's so many games where the commander is so central to what you're doing that the only thing you need is for the commander not to die.
Yeah, I agree.
And this just puts a layer that's hard to get through.
Yep. Next card is Gigantoplasm. 3 and a blue creature shapeshifter. Look at the art for one. I mean, holy moly.
It's kind of awesome, the art.
It looks like it's freaking Monsters Incorporated gone like bad.
Yeah, it's like Monsters Incorporated chasing a goblin who's chasing a minion from...
It's so bizarre. It's the Thibothep. Also, Mizzix.
The Thibothep?
Thibothep, yeah. Mizzix is the guy in the flavor text, so I like it even more. It's 3 in the blue. It's a creature shapeshifter. You may have Gigantoplasm enter the battlefield as a copy of any creature on the battlefield. So I guess it is copying the logo in the front.
Mm-hmm.
Except it gains X. This creature has base power and toughness X/X. Mizzix says, I appreciate things that exceed expectations, which is great because you'll notice that the X ability is permanent. It's not until end of turn. It's not like what's the mirror entity?
Right. If you pay 10, then it's a 10-10 from then on.
Yeah.
Until you pay something else.
We tweeted a little bit about this. The cool thing about this is if someone plays like Austere Command, saying only killing creatures with power of toughness 4 or greater, you can tap 1 mana and make this a 1/1, and it dodges a board
wipe. Quickly respond to it.
Yeah.
You also can, for free, just make it a 0/0.
Yeah.
Make X 0, and so you can trigger abilities like when this creature dies or mm-hmm. when it leaves play at instant speed.
Revel Arc is one of the things that people have pointed out to us. Yeah.
Nevermaker is a decent one.
Yeah.
You talked about Kokusho, which is actually, I think, a pretty good one, even though the legendary rule applies. Well, you can kill the original.
Else has a Kokusho too.
Yeah, or yeah. you can kill your original one
and keep
leave
another
this one,
one
out,
yeah.
and then at instant speed at any time, you can gain 5 life and drain everybody for 5. Or sorry, gain 20 life or whatever it is. Sorry, Kokusho is way better than that. But yeah.
Clones are some of my favorite cards in EDH because if your deck is monocolored or just doesn't have as many colors as someone else's, you just get to have access to some of the best creatures in the game.
Mm-hmm.
You can make a Shieldred. You can make a Prophet of Kruphix, you know?
It's pretty good. I want a Prophet of Kruphix. That can be a 12-12. That seems like a good...
Seems pretty good.
You know your Prophet of Kruphix? Yeah, I have one, but mine's a 12-12.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty good. The next card might be my second favorite card after Blade of Selves, not counting the commanders.
BDM's new favorite card.
This card's very good, and I think people are underestimating like how good it is in just every deck.
It's absurd.
It's Arachnogenesis. So it's 2 and a green for an instant, 3 mana. Put X 1/2 green spider tokens with reach onto the battlefield, where X is the number of creatures attacking you.
Hmm.
Prevent all combat damage that would be dealt this turn by non-spider creatures. So your spider... Basically, they attack you with 10 dudes. You cast this. You make 10 1/2 spiders with reach, and then it also fogs all their creatures, but your spiders still do damage.
Wow.
People are sort of, they're not really, I think they're thinking too much about this. Yes, it's great that your spiders may eat some of their creatures.
That's not going to happen too often. They're 1/2s, right?
Yeah, but they have reach. You can stack block or whatever, but it doesn't matter because you fogged them. They're not doing any damage to you.
And they tapped out.
And you just made 10 1/2s for 3 freaking mana.
They have reach, too. They can block the craziest creatures in the game.
Like, this is severely undercosted to me. Like, yeah. A fog is a 1 and a green.
Mm-hmm.
So for 1 more mana, I just sometimes get like 4 to 20 spiders.
Yeah, this card's really cool.
I mean, this is going to be like think of those token games where like let's say somebody does something insane like, hey, I Zealous Conscripts my Kiki Jiki,
mm-hmm.
and I make an arbitrary number of Zealous Conscripts, and you're like, fine, and then they go attack you, and you go, okay, Arachnogenesis, arbitrary number of spiders, on my turn, I kill you.
Yeah. I think this card's absurdly powerful.
Every green deck, I think.
Yeah, I would agree. Unless you're meta, no one is ever attacking anyone.
That's true. If you never die in creature combat, then I wouldn't. But besides that, and that's pretty rare, this is just like... Because fogs are already playable.
Yep. Like, so many games are decided by combat, too.
Like, yeah. By like rarely. One dude swinging at you for 50, or else 50 dudes swinging at you with Craterhoof Behemoth.
Yeah,
you know?
And either way, if you get to have another turn to do something, even if you are drawing, you have to draw your out or whatever, it's still better than just dying.
Even without the spiders, it's often good because what happens is they go in for the kill, you fog, and now everyone has a chance because they go, oh. Because usually to kill somebody, to KO them, you have to make some big move.
Mm-hmm.
Put Craterhoof Behemoth out or, you know, do some sort of sequence of events where you make 100 tokens. And then... all in that same turn, you use them. And if you can go fog, now all of a sudden everybody sees the threat and they can turn and go, well, okay, at Wrath.
Yeah.
You know, and so fogs are just good. This one just sometimes makes 20 spiders. This is insane to me. I love this card.
I'm all in. Going an evergreen deck. I don't play enough fogs as is, so yeah. I'm definitely going to play this one. Skullwinder is my next choice. It's a snake. 2 and a green.
Oh,
1/3 snake
combo.
And, that's about it. It has death touch. It says whenever Skullwinder enters the battlefield, return target card from your graveyard to your hand. Then choose an opponent. That player returns a card from his or her graveyard to his or her hand. Now people may be like, I don't want my opponents getting cards. Let's say I'm playing a mono green deck, or I'm playing green blue, and I don't have access to a card like Path to Exile, and my opponent has already used it, and they're like, something has happened. I'm like, oh, guys, can anyone respond to this? Everyone's like, I use my thing, man. Skullwinder.
Very often, you're in a position where, yeah, if I'll give you that card back for a specific purpose, and they'll agree to it, because why not?
Mm-hmm.
And so you basically are getting your own Path to Exile in that scenario, just somebody else is casting it.
Yeah,
so now I got two cards out of my graveyard, basically. Yeah, I really like that thinking. I think people, again, they're just thinking of only the downside. But if politically, you can use this, too. You can be like, hey... You know, I can choose any of you. Who's willing to like not attack me or help me out? And then you're like, okay, I'll do you.
And sometimes players only have lands in their graveyard, you know, it's early, or they have nothing in their graveyard because someone Bajuka bogged them, you know. So there are ways that Skullwinder, I think Skullwinder is much more versatile than people give it credit for.
Yeah.
And not many people have talked about it, so I don't think people really, there's not like, oh, no one likes Skullwinder kind of thing. It's still a sweet card. I think it's in decks that don't have enough regrowth effects, this is a great one.
There are definitely going to be times where Skullwinder is actually better than Eternal Witness because you'd rather get somebody else a card out of their graveyard than yourself.
Yeah, totally.
So it gives you that flexibility.
For sure.
I like it. There's one that got spoiled like right before we started recording.
Oh my gosh.
And it's very good.
The art's really cool too.
Yeah, the art's sweet. It's called Thief of Blood. It's 4/2 black for a vampire, 1/1. So it's a 6-mana 1/1.
Boo.
Alarm bells should be ringing. It does have flying, so I guess it's a 6-mana 1/1 flyer. It says, as Thief of Blood enters the battlefield, remove all counters from all permanents. Thief of Blood enters the battlefield with a 1/1 counter on it for each counter removed this way. Whoa. So it doesn't remove experience counters because players are not permanents, but it does just murk all planeswalkers.
Yep, it murks Beastmaster Ascensions.
It Animars.
Well, it doesn't kill it, but it just gets Marith's the counters off.
And Gaves.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't murk Kresh, but it just gimps cards like Kresh.
Yeah.
There's a lot of 1/1 counters in general in Commander, so there's oftentimes it's just going to either severely cripple or else actually kill a whole bunch of stuff and then be huge.
Yeah, cards like Luminarch Ascension, too, that have counters on it. So Thief of Blood is really cool. Also, if you have a Dark...
The Vivid Lands.
If you have a Dark Depths out, it will get rid of all those immediately as well. Make it a 2020 or whatever.
This is a very good card. It just seems like the kind of card that like no one sees coming too. Like somebody's sitting over there happy and they've got their 3 planeswalkers and the entire like there's nothing anybody can do, you know.
It kills Ugin immediately.
Yeah, and you're just like, boom, take all the counters off all that stuff.
Yeah.
And by the way, I have a 27/27 flyer.
It's card sweet.
Yeah. I think it's very good.
Another card they
want. Somehow this is an uncommon.
Yeah, right. That could have been a general.
How is that an uncommon? Oh man, as a general, it's just so broken.
Yeah. Deadly Tempest is a black card I wanted to talk about because it's a board wipe for black. It's 4 black/black. Destroy all creatures. Each player loses a life equal to the number of creatures he or she controlled that were destroyed this way.
Hey, John Stone, I think he said he had a hand in. I don't know if this is 100% his, but he had a hand in designing this card. My buddy from high school. Again.
Nice. This card is just cool. It drains people for life, but it's also a board wipe in black that I think is a pretty powerful board wipe.
6-mana board wipe, and it just happens to have the random upside of severely hurting or KOing people who have a lot of creatures.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like it.
We should probably talk about Magus of the Wheel, too.
Oh, yeah, Magus of the Wheel. I totally forgot about it.
Yeah, there's a new wheel card.
Oh, man. How did I forget about this card?
Or a new Magus of the, sorry. Because this card is, a functional reprint of...
Yeah, they did all Maguses of a lot of the old cards, like Magus of the Moat and Magus of the...
Disc.
Yeah, and
for
so
Nevermiral's Disc.
Yep. So this is for Wheel of Fortune. It's 2 in a red for a 3/3. These 3-mana 3/3s are just pretty good anyway. This is like the Bastion
Protector.
Protector. Yeah. I mean, price wise, you can pay 2 red and tap and sacrifice Magus of the Wheel, and each player discards his or her hand, then draws 7 cards. So it's exactly Wheel of Fortune when you activate it.
That's sweet. By the way, it doesn't come into play tapped. So if you have a Haste Enabler in red, you can just do it immediately.
I like this card.
Yeah, I like the card a lot too.
Because I love Wheel of Fortune. Oh, I feel so sad that I forgot that I didn't write it down on the list.
I was just looking through and I saw this really buff dude pointing at a wheel and I was like, oh.
This guy has to be related to Victor, right?
His skinnier, more eviler cousin.
Maybe they're not related, but they work out together.
Yeah.
Enthralling Victor and Magus of the Wheel are like workout partners. Because look at this guy's got like a 14 pack.
I'm counting. Yeah, he does. So there are tons of cards we didn't talk about. There's some really... I'm really excited for this commander set. I think they did a great job with the power level so far. It looks like it is very, very powerful overall.
There's a lot of cool, different, exciting stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like what they've done. There's some stuff that's so powerful that it's maybe borderline too powerful, which is exciting.
Yep. Gotta push the format some way.
Yeah, it'll be really interesting to see how they fill out all these decks with reprints and what kind of stuff we get. I think there's definitely a lot to play with here, a lot to be excited about.
Yep, I am super stoked. I can't wait to talk about the full deck list when they come out and the professor's coming to town in a couple of weeks when the decks come out, and I think we're going to
In
1 week, we're all going to sit around and play these decks, and it's going to be great. I can't wait to get first-hand experience playing them. I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
All right, time to move on to the end step, where we talk about something cool outside the world of Magic.
Well, at this point, it's over, but I thought we should mention that BlizzCon was last weekend.
For us, it's actually tomorrow and the next day, but for you, it'll have been last weekend.
Excitingly, Linkin Park is performing. I saw the Foo Fighters at BlizzCon.
BlizzCon is huge. It's insane how big it is.
Yeah, I remember when and Blizzard's grown so much in the past few years too, because it used to just be StarCraft, WarCraft, and Diablo.
Right, and now it's got Overwatch and Hearthstone, and Hearthstone is borderline bigger than everything except Warcraft now.
Yeah. Maybe be bigger. Maybe not. But like, that's insane, right? That's really, really cool.
It's pretty crazy. Yeah, we had a lot of fun there last year getting our tails whooped at the BlizzCon Brawl.
Yeah. Oh, you know, we'll link the video to the This Week in Rocket Jump.
We will?
It's hilarious.
It is funny. It is
the
funny.
Ending is yeah, gets me great. Every time. Yeah. yeah, so Josh and I will be back at BlizzCon. Gavin Verhey's there. Maybe we'll get a draft in. So is Brian Kibler, the Dragon Master himself. I sent him a tweet being like, let's draft Brian.
Yeah, I didn't get to play him when we did the pre-release at Comic-Con, so I'd like to play against Kibler at some point.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll lose.
Maybe. You're pretty good.
Probably lose.
I'm going to beat
him. So you're saying there's a chance.
You're saying there's a chance.
Always like playing with Gavin, our buddy Brian Tran. It's also, I just want to play Overwatch.
Yeah, you know, I want to play Overwatch as well.
I want to find some people we can kiss up to until we get in the beta for Overwatch, too.
Anyone listening that can help us out, just let me know.
all right, cool end step.
Yeah, very exciting. We'll make sure you watch the video that we recorded at last year's. It's great.
It's pretty awesome.
It is pretty awesome.
I think it's the only video not produced by Blizzard that's ever been on the Blizzard website or something like that.
Really?
I remember hearing.
Yeah. Oh, wow. That's amazing.
Yeah.
I'm honored.
Something like that, yeah, was the case.
Oh, big shout out to Siobhan Slaughter, who helped get us passes this year.
Thank you, Siobhan.
Also was the one that helped organize our butts getting whooped. So
thank you. That was still fun.
Yeah, it was fun. It was an experience. I got an experience counter off of it, right?
You got an experience counter.
Get your butt whooped, get one experience counter. God, that's a bad rate.
Make sure to check out our sister podcast, The Masters of Modern. They talk about the modern format and all things competitive Magic. You can follow them on Twitter at The MMCast, or you can find their podcast, rocketjump.com/TheMMCast.
Our editor for the show is Terry Robertson. Special thanks to Jeffrey Palmer for the Living Card animations. You can find him online at LivingCardsMTG, and you can check out all the animations for the show as well on our YouTube channel, where we put up video for all the cards, so you can read along the cards when we talk about them. Thanks to Terry, doing a great job editing the show. You can find that at youtube.com/TheCommandZonePodcast.
All right, everybody. Thanks for listening.
And we'll see you next time.
Peace.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter at JF Wong and at Josh Lee Kwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.